Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Stephanie Curtis in for Angela Davis. This week, an FDA panel recommended COVID-19 vaccinations for children ages 5 to 11. We've been waiting a long time for this. Shots could be available as soon as next week when the federal recommendations are finalized. Plus, tens of millions of adults in the U.S. are now eligible for booster shots of the vaccine. Meanwhile, Minnesota is coming off a spike in COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations. The entire state, except for Cook County up in the Arrowhead region, shows a high level of COVID-19 transmission, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Public health officials are urging all eligible people who have not yet gotten a vaccine to get one. This hour, I'll talk with two doctors about the latest vaccine news and the public health guidance to limit the spread of COVID-19. I want to hear from you. What questions do you have about the vaccine approval for children? Do you plan on getting your kids vaccinated? And do you plan on getting a booster shot? The phone lines are open right now. Give us a call, 651-227-6000. Or 1-800-242-2828. First, I want to bring in NPR News senior reporter Catherine Richard to get the latest news on COVID-19 pandemic in Minnesota. Hello, Kat.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. So there is a spike in positive COVID tests and hospitalizations in the last few weeks, like I said, and those numbers are now going back down. What metrics are public health officials in Minnesota watching right now?
Well, I think two of the biggest metrics that kind of give you a snapshot of where things stand are positivity rates. So that is the number of positive test results coming back as a proportion of all the tests that are done on any given day, and also hospitalizations. And I will say things have been going down, but it's been kind of in fits and starts. You know, things appeared to be peaking and then on the downward slope last week. And what we've seen is a lot of mixed messaging, I guess you could say, in the numbers this week. You know, it seems like maybe things are stalling out a little bit, hopefully not going back up. I think the next few days and into next week will really tell us more about where things are headed. Positivity rate has been going down, which is a good sign. And hospitalizations remain high and hospitals remain close to capacity, but it is not as bad as it was a few weeks ago.
There is big news about out of the FDA this week. The advisory committee recommended those vaccinations for children ages 5 to 11. What have Minnesota state officials said about their plans to provide vaccines for kids 5 to 11?
So there are going to be over 1,000 providers involved in this next phase of the vaccine rollout. If you're a parent, you're going to be able to get your kids' vaccines at your doctor's office, as you would, you know, the flu shot. You'll also be able to get them at pharmacies. And, you know, that might in some ways be easier for families to book. You will also be able to get vaccines at places that are part of your daily life. So the state is saying, for instance, there might be vaccination clinics at schools. You know, my kids get their flu shot at their school. So you might see something similar as well. What we're not going to see, though, are these huge vaccination clinics, you know, at the Vikings training stadium, for instance. There might be a few of them, but because kids might be scared and it might take a little more time and maybe being in a familiar situation will be comforting to them, I think there's going to be less of an emphasis on those types of large-scale vaccination clinics.
And you won't have to. I remember when I got my first shot, I drove to New Ulm, scenic New Ulm. It was lovely. I really liked the town. It was nice to visit there. But I wouldn't usually choose to drive 2.5 hours in the middle of a weekday to go. Will it be a little bit less of a scramble for these vaccinations for kids?
you know, significantly less. So the first thing to know is that right out of the gate, the state is going to have 255,000 doses on hand of this kid vaccine. That is about half of what we need to cover the entire population. The other thing, too, is that I think we should expect to see parents not necessarily rushing to get their kid a vaccine. That will be the right decision for some families, and for others, you know, even if their parents are vaccinated, they might want to wait a couple of weeks. So I really don't think this is going to be a mad rush. If there's anything that slows this down at all, it's actually going to be a labor issue. Will there be enough nurses, you know, other shot givers to give out all those shots?
It's really rare for kids to die from COVID. What's the argument for kids to get vaccinated against the virus? For parents who are thinking like, you know what, they're probably not going to get it. If they do, it won't be a big deal.
Right. So first of all, I think if you ask any doctor who's, you know, treated kids with COVID, they would say, yes, it is rare for kids to get really ill, to be hospitalized, and certainly to die. But as one doctor told me earlier this week, if you're the parent of that child who's in the ICU, it doesn't feel rare at all. So parents need to decide whether that's a risk they're willing to take. But the bigger thing here, and I think sort of from a public health perspective, is that this is a part of the population where a lot of transmission is happening right now, right? So if we get enough kids vaccinated in this age group, they're at school, they're breathing all over each other, not washing their hands properly, you're going to see a smaller ecosystem for the virus to circulate in. And if that ecosystem shrinks, that also means there are fewer opportunities for the virus to mutate yet again into something that, you know, could be more transmissible and potentially more dangerous. I don't think anyone would want that right now.
So this could really tamp down the spread of COVID-19 in Minnesota.
It could, but I think you would need to reach, you know, pretty high levels of vaccination. The Walz administration has said this week that they would like to see, you know, all kids that are eligible fully vaccinated. Or, I'm sorry, 80% of all kids who are eligible fully vaccinated within the next 6 months. So that would be, you know, the goal for them. But whether we get to that point or not is a different question.
So vaccination rates overall are hovering around 70% for Minnesotans 12 and up who are completely vaccinated. What are public health officials doing to reach the people who are not vaccinated yet?
You know, I think we're continuing to see more of the same. The campaign has really shifted from, you know, come get your vaccine and people lining out the door to, hey, let's have a one-on-one conversation, or who's the trusted messenger in this community that has lower vaccination rates who might be able to spread the word about the benefits of being vaccinated. We've also seen more and more incentive campaigns, you know, everything from getting a shot at a Vikings game and getting some Viking swag to just straight up money. You know, I mean, there have been gift cards handed out, and they are sort of focusing that gift card campaign among teenagers right now, where we continue to see sort of lagging vaccination rates.
We are moving it. It's getting chilly out there. We're going to be moving indoors. So yes, the kids will be vaccinated and that might help cut transmission, but we're going to be sitting in rooms together for many, many months to come. What have public health officials said about these coming months?
Right. So, you know, in my family, at least, our eyeballs are on Christmas, which we were not able to celebrate in the way that we normally do last year. So for us, getting our kids vaccinated in time to go see family is going to be a big deal for us. And I think a lot of parents are sort of in that same boat. The thing that is different right now is not only do you have all these kids that are just now going to have access to the vaccine, you also have the reemergence of flu, which we barely had last year. We also have a ton of RSV cases. This is a respiratory illness virus that affects younger kids, sometimes very severely, emerging earlier than usual. So when we hear about a lot of sickness going around, we're talking about all of these different viruses that mimic COVID, that could be COVID, that should be treated as if it's COVID until we've confirmed that it is not. And when we hear about pediatric ICU capacity, it's not that they're overrun with COVID cases. It's that we're seeing a ton of other stuff that is affecting kids. So that is what we hear about, is like, it's not just COVID, it's all this other stuff that we're going to have to deal with through the holiday season and the indoor season.
So if we get sick with something else and we need to go to the hospital, are there enough hospital beds right now in Minnesota? What's capacity like?
So yes, there are enough beds, but it is tight. You know, I think we've heard a lot of stories in the last few weeks of care having to be delayed because there isn't space somewhere to move a patient, for instance, to a higher level of care. And that is not a situation that anyone wants to be in. You know, you could go in for an appendix issue, right, and have to wait a little bit longer to get that taken care of. That could be a really scary and potentially life-threatening situation. In normal times, that wouldn't be. So don't hesitate to go to the doctor if you need to. But also, you know, I think just this, understand that, you know, capacity is still pretty tight.
Great. Kat, thanks so much for starting off the show with us today. Appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
Catherine Richard is a senior reporter for NPR News. She's been covering the COVID-19 pandemic in Minnesota. She's been tireless. You can see all her work at nprnews.org. I want to bring in two more guests now. We've got Dr. Robert Jacobson. He's a pediatrician and vaccine researcher with Mayo Clinic Children's Center. And Dr. John Misa, the vice president and clinical officer for Allina Health. Welcome to both of you.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Dr. Jacobson, I want to start with you. What was your reaction when you heard the news that the FDA approved vaccines for children 5 to 11 this week?
I was delighted to read the news, having read the press release from Pfizer's announcement about the trial with children 5 to 11 years of age. I expected the advisory committee to make this recommendation, but every step is important. This was an important step, and I was incredibly happy.
So how will this pediatric dose work? How is it different from the adult dose?
This represents a third of the dose in a different formulation than we are giving those 12 years and older. A lot of trial work actually goes on before this big trial that led Pfizer to present the data to the Food and Drug Administration. Dose finding work needs to be done in each age group. We use different doses of vaccine in different ages for different reasons. It's important to make sure that the dose is effective, that it makes antibodies, that protects against disease, but it's also important to make sure that it's not overly reactive. The body sees the vaccine as a foreign body and makes a reaction to it. It reflects the innate immune system. Children have a very vibrant immune system. So I'm not surprised that younger children can achieve just as good immunity with a much lower dose. And this is the case for those 5 to 11 years of age. It will be a dose that represents a third of the antigen-producing power of the adolescent and adult version.
All right. Some of the advisory members with the FDA, they expressed concern about vaccines causing myocarditis. This is a rare condition involving inflammation of the heart muscle in young vaccine recipients. Can you tell us more about that risk?
It is a rare risk where the older adolescents and young adults receiving the mRNA vaccine at very low rates, perhaps 1 out of 10,000 or less, were getting a mild to moderate and temporary inflammation of the heart muscle. We actually see this in Minnesota and across the United States with a lot of viral illnesses, and it's important to recognize that none of these cases have led to a death. On the other hand, about three times the amount of children are hospitalized with COVID about three times the amount die of COVID children in this age group. About two are hospitalized. Mild temporary myocarditis pales to the benefits that we get from preventing COVID-19 infection with vaccination.
What are the symptoms? What if someone next week their child gets a shot? How would they know if their kid was being affected with myocarditis? How does it exhibit itself?
Chest pain and shortness of breathing. Okay. These would be unusual findings for a child otherwise. And if this would develop in the week after vaccination, we would take it very seriously and investigate it.
All right. Dr. Misa, let's talk about booster shots before we go to the phone lines. We've already got some people lined up and we'll probably get a lot more questions. But I want to ask you, what does the booster do?
That's a great question. First, let me acknowledge how confusing this likely is for so many people. The boosters, the approval for the boosters have been rolling out fairly quickly in recent days, and with three different manufacturers of the vaccine and in different stages of approval, this can get very confusing. So first, let me just start by acknowledging that and saying that I think the boosters are very, very important. What we're seeing in real-world studies around the globe is that there is waning immunity following the COVID vaccine immunization. And this is just like any other immunization we receive. I can't think of any immunizations offhand that don't also require a booster of the many vaccines that we receive in our lifetime. So we're learning that this immunity is waning. And the goal here is to always prevent serious illness, hospitalization, and death. And that's exactly what the booster program is designed to do. Particularly starting with the ages of 65 and above. We know that this booster is very important in continuing that protection. And then in younger age groups, it's also extremely important in providing protection for those with other medical complications. So the booster really is a nice shot to our immune system, if you will, to give us that extra immunity for that significant protection that we need.
So who's eligible right now? Should we be waiting for our doctor to reach out to us, or should we just go to CVS and ask for it?
That's a great question. Let me try to break this down as easily as possible, because as I mentioned, it does get a little confusing and complicated. I'll start with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, because that might be the easiest. If anybody received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which was for 18 and above, 2 months following that immunization, they are eligible for a booster now. And that's anybody over the age of 18 who received the Johnson & Johnson specifically. It's a little bit of a different story for the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines. If you receive the Moderna or Pfizer vaccines, and it's been 6 months that have passed since you've completed it, if you're above the age of 65, you're eligible for your booster now. And if you're between the ages of 18 and 65, there are some caveats to that. You have to have other significant medical conditions, such as heart disease, diabetes, immunocompromised states, that type of thing, where you then can be eligible for your booster now. And I just want to say one other note about the immunocompromised states, because this can get a little confusing. Individuals who are immunocompromised, who are having cancer treatment, as an example, or taking medications to suppress their immune system, they are absolutely eligible right now for a third, what's called a third dose. We don't even refer to it as a booster. If you received Pfizer or Moderna and you have an immunocompromised state, go ahead and get your third shot now. So a little confusing, and I'm hoping that clears it up a little.
No, that was great, actually. Thank you so much. All right, my guests are Dr. Robert Jacobson. He's a pediatrician and vaccine researcher with Mayo Clinic Children's Center. And Dr. John Misa, Vice President and Clinical Officer for Allina Health. We're talking about the vaccines for children 5 to 11 that were just approved that should be coming in the next week or two here in Minnesota, and also the booster shots. If you have questions about COVID-19 right now, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to our first caller. Sue is in St. Louis Park and has a question. Hi, Sue. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for waiting.
So I have a sixth grader who's going to be turning 12 in December. And amongst the sixth grade parents, there's been a lot of conversation about whether to, some of the kids have already been vaccinated because they've already turned 12 and they got the full dose. And so now there's this new dose, which is a third of the dose. So it's much smaller, but our kids are kind of right on the edge. Like my kid is turning 12 in December. And I'm really wondering, like, should I get the smaller dose now or should I wait until December and then get the full dose to get the maximum protection?
Great question. Thanks for calling in, Sue. Dr. Jacobson, what do you think?
I recommend that parents get their children who are soon to turn 12 vaccinated as soon as the vaccine's made available. And that means for an 11-year-old, 11-month-old child getting the child dose. This dose has been shown to make as much antibody in children 5 to 11 years of age as a dose of the adolescent adult dose given to a 20-year-old adult. And so it's not that you're getting a reduced or a limited vaccination. You're actually getting one that's been shown in your child's age to work incredibly well without any increased reactivity. Now, the child comes back 21 days later, having celebrated her 12-year birthday. Definitely get the 12-year-old dose because that's been studied and found effective and safe in 12-year-olds. I know it sounds at some point like hair splitting, but our whole vaccine program is evidence-based. We require trials with placebos, trials that parents worked very hard to get to their kids to every visit so that we can find out what dose works at each age and what dose is safe and with limited reactivity. So I would stick to the age of your child and get the dose, but please don't delay and wait until your child is old enough to get the dose. You're putting your child and your family at risk for bringing home the infection during a time when something was available for you to make a difference. And I know this sounds unusual, but this is actually what we did with the flu vaccine back when we were using a 0.25 milliliter dose of Fluzone for children up to 3 years of age. And then as soon as they turned three, we were giving them 0.5 milliliters of the dose, even when it was a second dose that season for that three-year-old just starting the flu vaccination series. So we have experience with dosing. This is based on evidence. This makes it simple in terms of record keeping and getting your child scheduled when the vaccine becomes available to you.
Let's go to the phone lines again. Renee from Eden Prairie. Renee, I don't think you have a question as much as a story and maybe a shout out for vaccines.
Good morning, Stephanie. You're morning. Right. Thank you for taking my call. I got my booster on Monday, and we have an 8-year-old at home who we have been navigating a lot of COVID disruption since the beginning of school out here. Friends and classmates just recently, actually 2 days ago, her best pal that she walks to and from school with and plays with after school indoors was tested positive, and also with a sibling. And so, you know, we, of course, have been very motivated by health, absolutely. But really, the second thing for us is the, as Kat said, you know, the transmission within the schools and that waterfall effect. Because if our daughter is not at school, my husband and I are obviously helping her at home and supporting her. I have my own business, which is in the mental health field. If I'm not working, I'm not. My business is affected, and my mental wellness support for my clients is also impacted. So that's really been a driver for us in this entire, you know, what are we on, 19, 20-month experience. Yeah. At this point. So as the doctor just said, just about like the rushing to get the kids, I think we have a Minnesota almost, let's stay back and not be the first ones there. But I'm feeling very much the opposite. So we are able to fly and travel for Thanksgiving and see my parents who are old and older. And
that'll be wonderful to be able to see them.
Yeah. So we just, I guess my point is, you know, talk to your physician. Read the science, make the decision that is right for you. But at the end of the day, we all have a part in this in keeping the transmission low and keeping our kids in school and mentally well also.
And you got your booster, right, Renee?
I did. I got it on Monday.
How'd you feel afterwards?
The worst out of all three of them.
Oh, really?
I actually, at one point, thought that I may have COVID. I had a fever. I had chills, fatigue, headache. But the most unnerving thing for me was that my oxygen level had gone down about 4 percentage points. And that was a little terrifying at one point. So, you know, because of the friend that also had tested positive, we all, you know, tested and it was negative, but it was a little disconcerting, the process for me with the booster. And I don't want to scare anybody to not get it.
Let me ask Dr. Misa about that. So what do you think of Renee's story about the booster, and how should people expect to feel after the, getting their booster? Will it be different than the first two?
That's a great question. And, you know, Renee really touched on a number of important points. But let's first tackle the side effects. What should people expect with the booster shot? And so far, what our studies are showing is that the side effects are very similar, if not the same, with the booster as it is to the primary series. And actually, Renee mentioned a couple of them. Fever is the most common, headache, fatigue, and pain at the injection site. And what the studies have shown, looking specifically at the boosters, is that that's occurring with the same frequency, and it's occurring with the same severity. And like the original investigations for the primary series, not the booster, but the primary series, that the serious side effects are also indeed extraordinarily rare with the boosters as well. So far, we're basically not seeing anything unexpected with the booster shots. People react differently. Some people have had reactions with the first one. I myself had a reaction with the second shot. It was temporary. And now I imagine some people will have some side effects with the booster as well. And she also touched on another point I really want to underscore, and I really appreciate Renee's story about her desire to get her children vaccinated. You know, right now in the United Kingdom, where they have a prolonged surge going on in Great Britain, they're estimating that about one-third of all new cases right now are in children. And this is prolonging their current surge. And, of course, at a global view of this, it provides more opportunity for this virus to mutate and make more variants. So, again, getting our children vaccinated is so critically important, and getting our boosters as well. And I'm sorry, Renee had some of those side effects. And like I said, they're not really different from the primary series.
I'm Stephanie Curtis. I'm sitting in for Angela Davis. This is NPR News. We're talking about COVID-19, the vaccines that were just approved for children 5 to 11, and the booster shots that have been rolled out, and how it's affecting COVID here in Minnesota and your families, too.
A coup in Sudan. World leaders gather in Rome, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff sounds the alarm. General Milley says China's recent test of a hypersonic missile is something we should all pay close attention to.
I don't know if it's quite a Sputnik moment, but I think it's very close to that.
More on the Friday News Roundup next time on 1A.
That's 1A next here at 10 a.m. on NPR News. Monday morning at 9, Angela will be back. She's going to be talking about the Great Resignation and what employers can do to stop it. On the podcast for the show, you can listen to Twyla Dang. She hosted a show, In Focus. It's a conversation about sustainability in Indian country. Download the podcast. Just look for NPR News with Angela Davis, or tell your smart speaker to play the NPR News with Angela Davis podcast, and you can listen whenever it's convenient for you.
Programming is supported by Minnesota Monthly's Best Of Gift Box. Each box includes an assortment of local and artisan gifts and treats from local businesses. Details at minnesotamonthly.com/giftbox.
All right, now back to our conversation about COVID-19 vaccine booster shots and vaccines for children ages 5 to 11. I'm Stephanie Curtis in for Angela Davis. So this week, an FDA panel recommended COVID-19 vaccinations for those kids 5 to 11. Shots should be available to children as soon as the federal recommendations are finalized next week. Millions of U.S. adults in the U.S. are also eligible for booster shots of the vaccine. We're answering your questions about the vaccine news. My guests include Dr. Robert Jacobson. He's a pediatrician and vaccine researcher with Mayo Clinic Children's Center, and Dr. John Misa, the vice president and clinical officer for Allina Health. Let's go to the phone lines. Mary from Ely gave us a call at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Hello, Mary.
Hi. I am just wondering if we have any idea when younger kids will be able to get vaccinated. I have a 2- and 3-year-old, and we're really looking forward to being able to get them vaccinated.
Of course you are, I'm sure. Dr. Jacobson, what do we know about that?
Those trials are underway as well, both for Pfizer and Moderna, and we hope for good news leading to submissions from both manufacturers of their data to the FDA so that the FDA can go through a similar process that it did with the data for those 16 and older, 12 through 15, and now 5 through 11.
Let's go to Julie in St. Paul. Julie, hello. How are you today? Oh, Julie just dropped. Well, I'm going to ask. I'm going to tell you what Julie wanted to know because I want to know it too. Julie said, I am getting my booster shot. Should I mix and match? I had Moderna. Should I get Pfizer or stick to Moderna? Dr. Misa?
Yeah, great question from Julie. Right now, we're excited to say that mixing and matching is totally acceptable and has been approved. So if you have received the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, or the Johnson & Johnson, for that matter, you can go ahead and mix and match with a different manufacturer for your booster shot. There's some early thinking right now that's being studied that there could be potentially some benefit to mixing and matching. Perhaps we get a broader protection if you mix and match. I get this question a lot, as you can imagine, in the last week or two, and I always start by saying the best booster shot to get is the one that's the most convenient to receive. So let's just start with that. If you go into a pharmacy or you go to a clinic where they have one type of manufacturer available for your booster, go ahead and get that one because that's really the best booster that you can get. And if it's a different manufacturer, it's also okay to go ahead and get a different manufacturer.
I'm excited about this next call from Yadessa because she has the question that I have too. Yadessa in Minneapolis, ask your question. I'll be listening eagerly. Is Yadessa there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
I have a question regarding COVID-19. I know people in the family said, I've had COVID-19 and it's no worse than a common cold. Matter of fact, common cold is worse. And should they be tested? In other words, what's going on here? They also say, well, this is not dangerous. The people that are dying of underlying causes. They die with COVID-19. They don't die of COVID-19. And so what is the percentage here of people that die actually have death caused by COVID-19 versus underlying causes? And then if people have had this rather nuisance COVID-19, should they be tested just to make sure that they actually did have it? And what test would that be? Because to me, it's confusing for multiple members of a family say, oh, I've had it, and it's a breeze, forget it. We don't, you know, people are making money off of this and don't, you know, whatever.
All right. Thank you so much. Dr. Misa, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Let me break some of that down for you, Odessa. So firstly, let's just start with the seriousness of COVID infections. It is true that many people can get COVID and have very mild disease or maybe not even know that they have it. That is not a false statement. However, it is also true that you can get COVID and absolutely die from COVID. And in fact, it's scary to say, but I believe COVID this year is becoming the third leading cause of death in the nation, which is right after cancer and cardiovascular disease. That's pretty horrifying. We have many people who are dying from COVID without comorbidities, without other serious illness. So COVID can, be very, very deadly. What makes COVID scary is that although many people can get infected and only a small percentage will wind up in the hospital or die from it, the number of people getting infected is so large. This is such a highly transmissible disease, especially the Delta variant, so much more transmissible than many other infectious diseases we've ever dealt with as a community, as a global population. So because so many people are getting infected, we are seeing so many people in the hospital, and unfortunately, some of those people will go ahead and die from COVID. Now, if you've had COVID, where it's helpful to know is it's helpful to know in the active stage of infection. So go ahead and get tested. So this way you can help prevent transmitting it to others who may not tolerate COVID as well as you have. So it's still important to know when you have COVID. And finally, I'm going to put a plug in again for immunizations. If you've had COVID infection in the past, studies are showing that it is incredibly protective to go ahead and get a COVID immunization shot, even if you've had COVID before, because it gives such a boost to our immune system that you have considerable more protection from future infections and future variants. So even for folks who've had COVID-19, we recommend that they go ahead and get an immunization as well.
We had a listener write in who's asked, can kids receive their flu shot and COVID-19 shot at the same time? Dr. Jacobson, what do you think?
Yes, and we're doing that right now. We're actually vaccinating our patients 12 through 17 right here in the offices at Mayo Clinic with all their vaccines due. And if they're due for their HPV vaccine at 9 years of age and their COVID vaccine, we give both along with their flu vaccination. Early on, when we first rolled out the vaccine, we were being very careful in terms of avoiding giving two vaccines at once, just to make sure that in the first millions who got the vaccine, that we weren't attributing symptoms or reactions to the COVID vaccine that were due to other vaccines. Now we know, from having vaccinated millions and millions of people, how safe it is to give all the vaccines due at the same time, and frankly, how dangerous it is to put off preventive services like other vaccines needed during the time of COVID. And so we are routinely vaccinating our patients due for the flu vaccine and other vaccines along with their COVID-19 vaccine, and we'll be doing the same with our 5 to 11-year-olders.
All right, Kevin in Minneapolis is our next caller. Hi, Kevin. You've got some kids, and you've got a question about them.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm vaccinated and got COVID about a month ago and passed it on to my kids, and they all caught it, and we just got off quarantine, all feeling a lot better. And my question is, we're all going to get them vaccinated as well, 5-year-old, 8-year-old, and 11-year-old. How long, is there a certain time period you'd want to wait before getting them immunized post-COVID, or do you just go for it when it's available and ready?
Thanks, Kevin.
Well, first of all, if any of the family members received either convalescent plasma therapy or monoclonal antibody therapy to treat the COVID, then those people need to wait 90 days because the vaccine will not be seen by the body if there's monoclonal antibody or convalescent plasma on board. Otherwise, any time after you've recovered from the COVID-19 infection and no longer isolating, you can get the vaccine. You are protected by the prior infection for perhaps 3 months, though new symptoms of an infection it can occur in people earlier. Not everyone has this full response to the natural infection. And so when the vaccine's available, it's a really great time to get the vaccine if you don't have reasons to delay.
Carrie from Goodland is our next caller. Hi, Carrie. What's your question for the doctors?
My call. My family, we come from a long line of, we have a high level of autoimmune diseases in our family. Myself alone have MS, extensive bone sarcoidosis, and POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. My sister, she had gotten the diagnosis of Crohn's disease after she had taken her MMR at 2 years old. And so we just, it kind of keeps going along. And our big concern, I have a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. She has little older children that are teenagers. But our concern is triggering an autoimmune disease with our kind of our high genetic probability. Is there any, any evidence or anything you could add to us making that decision to give our kids the COVID vaccine, just with that fear in mind that we could trigger something that we're genetically predisposed to?
Thanks, Carrie. Dr. Jacobson?
Yes, we have evidence both with COVID-19 vaccination as well as with other vaccinations that they do not trigger autoimmune diseases. Even though your family member suffered that the incidence of Crohn's disease following an MMR vaccine, trials that compared the MMR vaccine against placebo, as well as large epidemiologic studies, have shown no association of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccination with causing inflammatory bowel disease or Crohn's. In these trials with the COVID-19 vaccine, individuals with autoimmune diseases were allowed to be vaccinated. We had individuals randomized to both groups who got the vaccine and placebo and found no triggering or stimulating of the autoimmune disease following the vaccination. The way vaccines work is locally, they work to create or mimic the manufacture of the proteins that the infection would cause. And then the cells there respond to those specific proteins to make immunity to the body. This is not a generalized assault to the immune system. In fact, our biggest problem with these vaccines are when the body ignores them, such as in the case with a person who's moderately or severely immunocompromised. It's not so much that this is a major stimulus to the immune system. In fact, if that were the case, COVID-19 infection would be triggering autoimmune diseases at much, much greater numbers.
This is NPR News. I'm Stephanie Curtis in for Angela Davis. Today, we're answering your questions about the latest vaccine news. My guests are Dr. Robert Jacobson, a pediatrician and vaccine researcher with Mayo Clinic Children's Center, and Dr. John Misa, the vice president and clinical officer for Allina Health. Let's go to the phones again. We got a lot of calls. Sarah is in Minneapolis. Hi, Sarah. What would you like to talk about?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a five-year-old. My husband and I are both vaccinated, and for the last 20 months, none of us have had COVID. He's now eligible, but what do I tell him? He's been asking me, when is this going to go away, Mama? My mask hurts my ears. What do I tell him? Because we both got our vaccines, and nothing changed. We still avoid restaurants. We're still wearing our masks. We're still washing our hands. How do I explain this to him? And what if a new variant shows up 4 months later and I have to tell him, oh, wait, now you got to get a booster? It's just I'm finding myself in a really strange place as a parent.
I think that a lot of people are there with you, Sarah. Dr. Jacobson?
I think that you're struggling with something that many of us who are following all the rules are struggling with. We're doing the masking. We're doing the social isolating. We're avoiding the crowds. We're getting our vaccines. We're getting tested when we have symptoms. And yet we have this horrific pandemic that continues to take its toll on everything that we used to do on our families and on our country. I really recommend all parents always talk to their children about the vaccines and other preventive services due in advance. You can allay a lot of anxiety and fear by explaining to them, just as you get your child vaccinated against influenza, why you're getting your child vaccinated against COVID-19. It's part of what we do, like hand washing, like wearing a mask, to control the pandemic and protect our loved ones and our neighbors and friends. Your child will understand at some level that this is making the child's immune system stronger to fight the infection and prevent the spread of the disease. That you have not suffered COVID during the last 20 months is in large part due to the steps that you took as parents to protect your child. This is the next step that's now available. I do hope and expect the children in my practice to have those conversations with their parents before the child presents, so they have a better sense of what they're going through. Yes, there is some pain with the injection, but this pain is a small part and will go away with the response to the immune system. And as the child gets older, they will get a better understanding of what you're doing with their health in terms of protecting them through vaccination and other steps you take.
Let's go to Jackie in St. Paul. Hi, Jackie. How are you today?
Oh, yes, fine. I have two questions. The first one is, how many studies have been done after a person's gotten two shots to see what their immunity is before they're given the third shot? And also, talking about the third shot, this kind of sounds like this is going to go on to infinity, because, you know, with a flu shot, you get a little reprieve. I mean, you're not telling us like this other woman, is this going to go on to infinity? What do you expect? Or what don't you know that you're not telling us about how effective these are?
Dr. Misa, is this going to go on forever?
Yeah, great question, Jackie. Let me start with the question around the studies first, how many studies are done. The answer to that is actually a lot. But more importantly than the number of studies, it's the quality of the studies. Because we have given globally 7 billion, that's billion with a B, doses of COVID vaccine, we have vast treasure troves of data now that's coming in from countries around the world to help us judge how well these vaccines are doing, how our immunity is holding up, and when do we need boosters. So that information continues to come forward at a very rapid clip. And I would say as a society, we also have to be comfortable with the fact that we're learning. And I think this makes people very uncomfortable because people want to hear facts, and they want to hear facts that are unchanging. And I wouldn't say our facts are changing more as they are evolving as we learn, because we really haven't seen a global pandemic in over 100 years. And we're learning as we go through this. And fortunately, because of modern technology, the way we're monitoring these vaccines in the safest way that's ever been done in human history for monitoring vaccines, we're getting tremendous amount of information to guide us. Now, will this go on forever? And this is a little bit also to the previous call. I think it was Sarah concerned about her children and this going on forever. And how do you talk to your children about it? How do we talk to adults about it? I would say that we are learning and figuring out how to live with COVID. I'm not sure if we're ever going to eradicate COVID. In fact, I doubt that we will. And I think there will be peaks and valleys in infection rates. I think there'll be seasonal effects. And I think there'll be boosters in our future, much like there is in influenza. For influenza, we don't think much or criticize much anymore about lining up to get our influenza shot annually. And those shots are based upon whatever the prevalent strain is. And one possible outcome for our future is that periodically we will have to go get our boosters to deal with whatever the most prevalent strain is. The good news is that the pharmaceutical companies and the manufacturing of these vaccines has been miraculous. In a really short order of time, they have been able to manufacture incredibly safe and effective vaccines that have been given over 400 million times in the U.S. and 7 billion times around the world. So I don't think we're always going to be in a state of mask wearing all the time and socially distanced and keeping away from our loved ones and friends. I think there will be seasonal variations and occasionally a correct response for those seasonal variations that occur with COVID into the future.
Before we go, I want to ask each of you about all the non-medical ways we've been trying to keep COVID away. Dr. Jacobson, should we continue masking and social distancing? And how long do you think that's going to carry on?
Well, I think we need to remember that, first of all, those who are moderately or severely immunocompromised may not respond to the vaccine. This additional dose may, for some, give them the response, but we still need to protect them. And we still need to protect those children under 5 who have not received the vaccine, as well as those who got the vaccine and just from bad luck did not respond to the vaccine. So I think until we see our case rates and hospitalization rates fall dramatically, we're going to need to continue masking and social distancing. And frankly, I can't wait to that time. I'm right there with everyone else wanting this to be over. But we have to do the work to get it over. And one of the ways that we're going to do this is through vaccination. I'm going to work very hard as a healthcare worker to make strong recommendations to all those for whom the vaccine is available. I'll answer their questions and their concerns about the vaccine. But meanwhile, I'll be wearing my mask. I'll be practicing good hand washing, and I'll be social distancing and avoiding crowds where appropriate. These are tough times. Only through really bringing the actual numbers, the rates down, are we going to be able to start enjoying some of the benefits of these measures. We're not there yet. Our positivity rates are still well over 5%. And we need to keep in mind that vaccinating children will actually play a major role in helping us control the spread of the disease. Right now, about 25% of the new cases are children. Right now, in America, one out of 500 children under the age of 18 has lost a parent or grandparent caregiver to COVID-19. One out of 500. We're talking about a very large number of children who have already suffered from COVID-19. We've got to do our part to help them in the months to come.
Thank you both. Our time is up today. I want to thank you both, Dr. Robert Jacobson, pediatrician and vaccine researcher with Mayo Clinic Children's Center, and Dr. John Misa, vice president and clinical officer for Allina Health. We heard earlier from NPR senior reporter Kat Richard. This conversation was produced by Samantha Matsumoto. Be safe, everyone. Angela Davis will be back on Monday.
Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.